Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Dr. Harold Levinson, who is a world-renowned psychiatrist and neurologist. He is credited with bringing about a dramatic medical breakthrough in the understanding, diagnosis, and successful treatment of dyslexia and its many related signal-scrambling disturbances of the inner ear and cerebellum. As a result of Dr. Levinson's extensive research, there is now renewed hope and often rapid and dramatic help for all children and adults with the above-mentioned disorders, as well as those patients with related but differently named inner ear and cerebellar syndromes. Dr. Levinson is the author of Feeling Smarter and Smarter, and I'm delighted, Dr. Levinson, to have you on the show today, and thank you so much for sharing all of your research and wisdom with us today.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. When we had our pre-interview, I had asked you to tell us about, your distinguished medical training and your background and all of the work that you've done. And then we can start talking about this very problematic issue of dyslexia that most everybody is familiar with. You know, they've heard the word, even if they don't necessarily understand what the symptoms are. So can you take us down the path of your medical training and your career and how you, came into this particular field of specialty?
Well, I had the same medical school internship and residency training in psychiatry and neurology that many of my colleagues had. But I had the amazing luck to work for the New York City Board of Special Reading Services. They had children at that time that had reading problems and learning problems, and it was thought to be a psychological problem, and I was psychoanalytically trained. And the more cases I examined, the more I realized that the psychological and the so-called Freudian theories made no sense. They sort of implied that there was voyeurism involved, and so kids wouldn't want to look, and so they didn't read. And then I abandoned the psychological theories. And I then examined it from a neurological point of view. And the neurological theory was very, very simple and very logical. If you had a reading processor impaired within the thinking brain, then clear signals going to this processor wouldn't be recognized. And so you would have reading problems. And it was known at the time that adult individuals who lost the ability to read because of a trauma to this particular area of the brain had what was called alexia. And so everyone, going back to 1896 and before, believed that dyslexia in children, a developmental disorder that children grew up with, had an impairment within the same reading processor in the thinking brain. And I, like everybody else, went along and tried to prove it. I tried to find the neurological signs proving there was something wrong with the thinking brain, the reading processor within the thinking brain. And I somehow felt that because I had the privilege of examining hundreds and hundreds of children with reading disorders within the Board of Education, that I would find the signs that nobody else found. And it was gung-ho, being young, being determined, and somewhat foolish. But I was determined, and I examined 1,000 consecutive cases of reading disordered children who were bright. And lo and behold, I couldn't find what anybody else couldn't find. Instead, what I found when I re-examined the data of 1,000 consecutive cases, I found that they were late talkers, late crawlers. They had difficulty with fine, gross, and rhythmic motor coordination. Not necessarily severe, but they had some. And when I examined them neurologically, 75% were found to have balance and coordination problems, typical of what you find with somebody having an inner ear problem and a problem within its supercomputer. It's called the cerebellum or the lower brain of an animal.
Well, I have to ask you a question, though. I have to ask you a question to clarify. Are there people who could have that kind of imbalance that aren't even aware that they're having balance problems or coordination problems? Or are the people that you identified and, that you revisited were they reporting in their history any of that? I mean, had that shown up as a precursor? No.
No, most of them didn't. It was elicited. I asked, the standard neurological developmental history that most doctors and pediatricians and neurologists ask. But most didn't pay attention to the balance and coordination symptoms, because how in the world can a balance disorder create a reading problem and a writing and a spelling and a math problem and memory problems? It was not comprehensible at the time. And everybody felt and believed it had to be a disturbance within the thinking brain, like alexic adults who lost the ability to read. So they knew, or believed they knew, where the problem was. They were just looking to prove it, and they couldn't prove it. And instead, they kept finding these balance and coordination signs. So how did they resolve the dilemma? They called them soft neurological signs, because it wasn't the hard neurological signs they were looking for. So they minimized their significance. And whether in desperation or having a eureka moment, probably after a number of years of examining these children neurologically, I said to myself, maybe in frustration or whatever, I said, if balance and coordination signs were the only signs they had, maybe there was something wrong with their inner ear and cerebellum. Maybe the thinking brain wasn't involved, because after all, most of these kids were bright and gifted. And it was known that Einstein and Edison and the many, many gifted individuals who had dyslexia. And if they had dyslexia and they were gifted in so many areas, there couldn't be too much wrong with their thinking brain. So the problem I had to resolve was, how in the world can an inner ear problem and a problem within the lower brain or cerebellum create all the symptoms that these children began to reveal about their reading problems and writing problems and spelling problems and difficulties with math and memory and speech, sense of direction and time. And of course, they had fears and phobias that nobody paid attention to. It was always thought to be secondary to the stress of failing. And almost all of them had feelings of inferiority, whether they admitted it or acknowledged it or not. And when they got better, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, many would say, now I feel like I have a brain. So it was obvious that the feeling of inferiority was related to an inferior functioning. And once the functioning improved, the feeling of inferiority rapidly disappeared, which is why I labeled my book Feeling Smarter and Smarter. So anyway, I just want to head back a little bit. I then developed a very, very simple theory to explain how in the world an inner ear problem and a problem within the lower brain can create so many different symptoms and yet no major neurological signs and symptoms.
Well, yes, and I want to stop you right there, because this, I find this personally, having treated patients and been in medical practice for a long time, I find this absolutely fascinating. And so I'm sure the audience everybody wants to know. They want to say, really? How is that possible? What is the mechanism? What's actually at play there? And how can I tell people about this information? Because there are so many people with dyslexia. Everybody knows somebody that has it. So I'm very excited that you're going to simplify an explanation for all of us about how the inner ear is connected to the cerebellum. So we're all eagerly waiting to hear this explanation. Hello?
Yes. Okay. So here's the explanation. Now, let me give you the simple part. What occurred to me is, if I spun everybody listening to your audience around, I can temporarily make them all dyslexic. I can create all the symptoms that dyslexics have. All I got to do is spin them around till they're dizzy. Not only that they're dizzy, but their signals are dizzy. They then won't be able to read straight, write straight, talk straight, remember straight. Their concentration would be off, their balance and coordination would be off. They wouldn't be able to stand near a ledge. They'd be afraid of heights. They'd be afraid of falling. So they'd be afraid of crossing an intersection. And they would develop a whole slew of motion-related phobias. fears of moving elevators, escalators, trains, planes, buses, because their motion sensitivity would be different and they couldn't process it. So then, from that analogy, I said to myself, we know that the inner ear controls balance and coordination. So what it does is it sends signals to all the balance and coordination and rhythmic centers. If any of these signals are scrambled, then you're going to get some balance and coordination problem, difficulty even with speaking, articulation problems, enunciation problems. You can even get eye tracking problems. The eyes following the letters and the words will lose their place and they get scrambled. And I suddenly said, well, maybe the inner ear and the cerebellum also sends scrambled signals to normal thinking brain processes. And if normal thinking brain processes get scrambled signals, then they can't read straight, write straight, talk straight. The memory would be hazy and foggy. They won't be able to concentrate. If they had to drive a car, they'd panic. If they had to do anything physical that required important coordination skills where they could get hurt, they would panic. So I suddenly realized that dyslexia could be caused by a simple inner ear cerebellar problem. And then once I realized that, I said to myself, if indeed that's true, dyslexia isn't even just a reading disorder that most people think it is. It really is a syndrome, a complex syndrome of many symptoms, of which reading is just one of them. And the reading among dyslexics didn't have to be severe as many people thought. It could be mild, it could be compensated, and it turns out that many dyslexic readers, when they're young, become superior readers later on, even on their own. So they even had the concept of dyslexia, just like initially they thought diabetes was a comatose state. And when they examined more and more diabetics, they realized they're normal individuals that even have normal blood sugars unless you stress them. And then you can determine that they really have very well compensated states of diabetes. So the recognition that dyslexia wasn't the reading disorder, as everybody thought, but a whole slew of inner ear cerebellar determined symptoms that varied among people in different combinations and different intensities. And thus the incidence jumped from what was believed to be 2% of the population to what I now believe to be 25% of the population, which means that there'll be at least one person in every family that has this problem. That's an enormous number of people.
Yes, no kidding. Wow.
And the tragedy is they didn't understand the problem. Most of us didn't. None of the experts still do. They're still clinging to the brain damage theory, which doesn't make any sense because if your brain processes were impaired, you can't fix them. And so they stay impaired and you don't get better. And we know that many dyslexics, if they're supported properly, if they're given good attention, if they're not abused by parents and teachers and peers and picked on, they get better. They're not cured, but they get better. If you have brain injury to specific processes, like in a computer, it doesn't get fixed no matter how many times you send signals in and repeat it. It gets a little bit better, but it doesn't. It's still majorly impaired. You don't get good readers in individuals who have an impairment within their brain processes. They never get better. So the analogy between alexia and dyslexia was scientifically wrong from the start. They didn't listen to enough patients. They didn't question enough patients. And they let a belief that was very, very simple and tantalizing blind them to all the clinical facts that were obviously apparent once you looked.
Well, that's very true, Doctor. And isn't some of it true because of, you know, the medical ego, medical investments, you know, what the byproduct or what the outcome can be because of those theories in terms of dollars? I mean, it's amazing as we step further and further away from things, we can see. I mean, you know, you've been a visionary. You've kind of been ahead of your time. And tell us, now, maybe I'm out of line here, but you must have gotten some flack about this. I cannot believe that you shake breaking up the, you know, the pre-existing concepts and beliefs about dyslexia didn't have a downturn for you or didn't have a downturn to it. Because let's face it, you know, every time something comes out, I know because in the field I was in, we used to talk about, long before it became standardized, that pregnant women needed folic acid to prevent neural plate disturbances, neural plate deformities during the fetus development. And it was considered quackery, and those of us who were, you know, really promoting and talking about preventing birth defects by the use of certain nutrients, even though it was discussed in 1946 in Women's Lying-In Hospital here in Boston, it got a really a lot of bad press and a lot of bad, you know, comments about it. So I have to assume that you also must have had some of that kind of blowback, yeah?
You bet.
Please share that with us, because I don't think people realize the courage it takes sometimes. It takes a lot of courage to not only find something and you know, a certain kind of tenacity to keep going and come up with an answer, but then to bring it to market, so to speak, to expose it. That is a very courageous act. So please tell us what happened. And I'll probably have to interrupt you and take a break in about 2 minutes. But please start the discussion. And then when we come back from our first break, we can really get into depth. Because, yeah, I think anybody who does anything visionary in medicine, I think, is a hero. Because it really is, it's really an abusive response that we get back, isn't it?
Well, anything that's new, that's completely new, that nobody ever thought of before. For example, it's not just me. What about the world is flat? How long did it take
exactly
to realize that the world wasn't flat? And you know what they wanted to do to all those people who thought the world was round using their eyes wide open and their reasoning? What about Galileo? What about the gravity, the fact that there was a gravitational force? If you dropped something, it fell. And they wanted to hang him. I mean, and being a psychoanalyst made it much easier to recognize the bias that we all have, myself included. I was biased also for the longest time. But because I was a psychoanalyst and I was realizing what patients were telling me. I saw over 35,000 patients to date and successfully treated as many. And this was a driving force. I saw that I can help these people. I didn't really care. I mean, I did care what other people said, but it didn't bother me as much as it would have. And it couldn't have stopped me, because every day I saw patients walk out of my office. Some improved within minutes, within hours, within weeks. These were people that had this problem for years. There were many adults that suffered severely in every single capacity. So it wasn't just a disorder of childhood. It was a disorder that affected the marriages, the upbringing of children, of adults, their jobs, their occupations, their failures. Many were led into drugs and other activities. They would never have gone had their self-esteem not been diminished and the avenues of success closed off. So I had a force driving me that easily overcame the normal resistance that nature has. There's a rule of nature called homeostasis. It likes to prevent changes. It likes to keep things the same. And so this is a general principle of nature, and we have these clubs in every field of science, in every field of education. And it threatened everybody in some way or other, and it shocked me to begin with. I thought, here I had a way of understanding these children for the first time. And understanding has tremendous psychotherapeutic value. These kids thought they were brainless. They thought they had no brain. They thought they were forever going to be this way. And suddenly when you explain, it was a simple in the ear problem. It was like spinning them around. Once they got dizzy, they couldn't read and write. And if anybody could get it, they didn't blame themselves so much. They felt much better. They felt that they really weren't that dumb. And once I was able to successfully treat them with inner ear improving medications, and they started to improve, and their self-esteem improved, the joy and actually it was like saving families, not just the children, but an illness in a child like that affects a whole loving family.
Oh,
and
of course.
It's a group
course.
Dynamic, and it reverberates just like failure and impairment reverberates negatively in a family. Positives also have tremendous effects on a whole group of people. So I was rather more easily able to dismiss all the biased views that people had, and they didn't even know they were biased. They thought they were right. And a matter of fact, in my book, I have photos of patients, and I quote them. I quote the parents. They have their real names. And I've been doing this for over 50 years. Do you know, in the whole time, my critics never, ever contacted any of my patients. They were given their names. They even called up and wanted to come to my office, many of them, including the National Institute of Health. I gave them the opportunity. I arranged my patients to be there. They never showed up. 60 Minutes wanted to do a show with me. And they came to my office, and I had patients from all over the world, okay? And my office was filled, and they took 5 patients, one from Florida, one from Nevada, one from Arizona, and they followed 5 patients to see how they would do. All 5 patients did extremely well, and they never called me back.
Wow.
So I called them, and they said, well, whatever happened? And they failed to call me back. And I called again. I'm persistent. So I wrote them a letter, and I said, obviously you wanted to prove that it didn't work, and you had no interest in the fact that
right,
it didn't
they wanted to report you as a quack. That was probably what that
was
about.
That was one. But they couldn't change and say to themselves, you know, if it did work, look what it would do to millions and millions of suffering children and adults.
Exactly.
How come they couldn't switch? I mean, I would do it. As doctors, we try things. It doesn't work. We drop it and we try something else. And let's say we think something's not going to work and we tell them and suddenly it works. Well,
Doctor, we do have to take a break because we're going. This is such a fascinating conversation. I mean, I have so many questions for you. There's so much to talk about. But we have to take 2 breaks, and I apologize. We're going to take our first break. So listeners, don't go anywhere. We will be back in just a moment with more of Dr. Levinson and his brilliant work, which I hope will be able to serve you as well as a lot of other people that you know. So don't go anywhere.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert, the number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
With Dr. Harold Levinson, who's a medical physician. He is a world-renowned psychiatrist, and he's a world-renowned neurologist who has been doing some amazing innovative work solving and curing problems with dyslexia, and he's written a book called Feeling Smarter and Smarter. So I'm real excited that you're with us today, Doctor. There's so many questions, a lot of things that we talked about. First, we talked about, the fact that you've been able to identify inner ear treatments. I'm sure these are standard, right? These are fairly standard medications and things, right, that are inner ear treatments. And to help people tremendously to realize that a lot of their cognitive problems are really coming, their neurological cognitive problems are coming, from something that is not what everybody was telling them it was. And the other thing is that, you know, you did bring this to people's attention, to authorities' attention, and you got a lot of kind of blowback and got ignored a lot. So let's pick up that conversation again. Are you treating these situations with standardized inner ear medications?
And nutrients, but I also want to add that fortunately, the Nobel Prize winner in the cerebellum jumped on my bandwagon very, very early. He understood my methods. He understood my diagnostic inventions, and he understood the whole thing. And it turns out that many of his colleagues did as well. Not all. It was a split. So I had many, many people supporting me, but that was understandable to me. Why wouldn't they support me? It was obvious. I mean, it was known. It was as simple as one and one is two. What was remarkable is to so many bright and gifted and dedicated researchers and experts, one and one never made two. It was zero. And that was the amazing thing. So let me get back to answering your question about medications and nutrients. Now, I can get about a 75 to 85% improvement rate, but this took a lot of time because we're dealing with an unknown area. And average doses and average medications mean nothing. And these medications for the inner ear were never used for this particular purpose.
Right.
And I just stumble on it again by being curious and determined and trying to find an answer. These medications are used for motion sickness. They're used for dizziness very often and imbalance. But nobody within the inner ear community, these are special experts even, ever connected dyslexia with inner ear problems. But I'll tell you, there's an organization called VEDER. It's a vestibular disorganization, disorder organization. And they have in their brochures and on their site a list of the symptoms that are caused by inner ear problems, proven on neurological and special inner ear techniques. And they never connected it with dyslexia and dyspraxia and speech problems. But in their list of symptoms, it says it can affect, inner ear problems can affect reading and writing and spelling and math and memory and speech and concentration. And they found exactly what I found independently, except they didn't call it by name. They just thought it was a little symptom here and a little symptom there. They didn't see the significance of what they had found.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I had a conversation today with an absolutely brilliant colleague, and we were talking about the lack of synthesis, the lack of integrated perception.
Yes.
There is such a lack, and this is, I have to tell you, across the board in medicine. When everybody started with the, they started with the specialization. That has been such a problem, because nobody is really integrating knowledge and information. And that's exactly what you did. You integrated and brought together the whole picture of what was going on. So please go ahead. Yes, you were talking about
the medications and nutrients. Well, now I have to tell you, I was a specialist in psychoanalysis. Then I had to become a specialist in psychiatry, which is somewhat different. Then I had to become a specialist in neurology. And then I had to be a specialist in what's called neuro-otology, which is the inner ear. And then special education and occupational therapy. And there are so many specialties that are involved in this. And very few people know it all. Nobody knows it all. But it's very difficult for many people to cross lines from one field, to follow an illness from one field into another, into another, into another. And this is a field that really affects, it's a disorder that affects multiple fields of study. And even in the beginning, the psychoanalysts believed it was psychological. They wouldn't accept it was neurological. The neurologists believed it was neurological. They wouldn't accept it was psychological, and they wouldn't even believe that there was another part of the brain except the thinking brain involved. So they were so specialized, they only looked for disorders within the thinking brain. So it shows how biased you can be, even within your own field. So you don't integrate facts within your own field, let alone multiple fields. So
right.
This is a general field that I, as a psychoanalyst, reviewed in this book, that we all like simple, straight line answers. 1 and 1 is 2, 2 and 2 is 4, simple. But medicine is very, very complicated. Disorders are very complicated. They go in curved lines, and they reach depths we never saw before. Not straight, not the world is flat. These areas and these impairments are curved. And there was a statement that somebody made that parallel lines keep crossing. And in medicine and in neurology, especially in the area of dyslexia, parallel lines keep crossing and going in circles. And you have to be flexible enough to follow where patients tell you to go. If you don't listen to them, you'll get lost and you'll never find your way back.
I absolutely agree. I think that's absolutely true. Yes. You've got to listen to the patient. I used to say when I was first in practice, if you ask the patient what's wrong with them, most of the time they'll tell you. They'll let you know, 'cause they know.
And if that's the value of history. And at one time, before we had all the sophisticated neuroimaging studies and whatever, there was a statement made by a brilliant clinician many, many years ago that history is 90% of the diagnosis. Getting history, meaning asking patients questions about themselves, their illness, when it started, what it affects, what makes it better, what makes it worse. Anybody else in your family have it? There's so much information that patients have, and they don't know they have it all unless you elicit it from them. And then if you can follow where this information leads you, you can pinpoint it better and better. And I have to tell you that 20 years to 30 years after my research, neuroimaging studies for the first time prove that the cerebellum is involved in dyslexia, ADHD, dyspraxia, meaning clumsiness or clumsy movement disorders, many language or speech disorders, and even many phobias and anxiety disorders. So I was always unfortunately 50 to 60 years ahead of my time, and much of it I had to do myself because nobody was involved in this area. Everybody was too busy doing what they were doing, and they never found time to go out of their way to explore unknowns. They had enough trouble dealing with so-called knowns, patients. So anyway, we're getting back to treatment. Now, it turns out that there's only a few or a handful of medications that can improve the inner ear, and there are some nutrients that can help it as well. And as we were talking many years ago, doctors didn't believe in nutrients. You know, they thought it was a waste of time. And it took many, many years to recognize that there are many helpful nutrients. But unfortunately, there's a schism there. You have the homeopaths on one hand and nutritionists on the other, and you have the straight-line doctors. Now they're starting to cross over a little bit only because of patient demand. But people who believed in homeopathic medicine never believed in regular medicine or feared it, and vice versa. They couldn't integrate. And it's
that was the whole thing. I mean, what I think, and I'm hoping, I'm really hoping, for our patients' sake and for our world, that people start to realize you've got to walk around something. You can't just be looking at it from a linear perspective.
No, it's not a linear disorder at all. It involves so many dimensions, psychological, sociological, educational, and on it goes. And even among the medical parts of it and educational parts of it, each one is a complicated lifetime study in itself. But the important thing is to be open-minded, to realize that no field has all the answers. And you have to listen, just as you have to listen to patients, you have to listen to other therapists. So what happened when I first started? Many occupational therapists and physical therapists said, you know, if we do a lot of exercise with these children, they can get better. And that so-called practice makes perfect. If you know, in Catholic schools, they taught you to write perfectly. Even if you were dyslexic and couldn't write at all, I guarantee you, unless you weren't afraid of being burnt at the stake, by the time you finished Catholic school, you wrote beautifully. Practice did make them perfect over a period of time. Then you have to ask, was it worth it? Especially now when we have the ability to word process and we can even talk into a computer and have it print out. So we have calculators. So we have many ways to treat this disorder other than medical. I also want to convey to your listener that medicine and my treatment isn't the only way to treat this disorder. There are many, many other ways to treat it. But what I have found is by medically treating the disorder, by improving the signals that the brain sends to the eye, to the brain, to the balance and coordination centers, to all areas of the brain, by correcting the signals, it makes it much easier for educators to teach these children to read and write and spell and remember better, because every other therapy involves signal input, no matter what the name is. Even chiropractors found that by adjusting the neck and the temporomandibular joint, they were able to get some improvements, and everybody laughed at them in the medical profession. And I said to myself, you know, it's possible. I don't have any experience with it, but my theory said, you know, anything that affects the inner ear, whether it's the joint, the temporomandibular joint, or TMJ, whether the neck is an integration point for the inner ear, so you can get cervical problems, neck problems, and it can affect inner ear-related symptoms, and it can make dyslexia worse. Even weather can change. You know, I'll tell you a whole bunch of stories if we have time, but let me tell you one. Let me get into the... So anyway, by treating dyslexics or people with reading disorders, I started them with inner ear improving medications, hoping that I can get the reading better. Lo and behold, I got not only the reading better, but patients then began revealing more and more about the symptoms they didn't know they had. Because when there is an improvement, they can then compare the improvement to what pre-existed it and give me a clearer answer. So I found out that people with dyslexics, after I started treating them and after their reading improved, they began to tell me, you know, it's not that I don't comprehend it. It's because when I try to read, I keep losing my place. The words get blurry. They double up. They wiggle on the page. When I try to read, my eyes get stuck on a letter or word. I have to blink. Also, in light or glare, I can't see. The whole thing, the paper is too shiny. I have to read in the dark. Some people have to read on their stomach or lying down. Others can only read in motion when they're walking. And they couldn't remember the letters and the words and recognize it. And they couldn't remember the phonics attached to the letters and words. And they couldn't connect in time the sight of the letter and the word with the correct phonic. And so that they had just from the, and many had delayed processing. Just to give you an example, and they would reverse the foreground in the background while they were reading. Now, if you had all this going on while you were trying to read, you wouldn't comprehend the questions asked about the material. Not because your brain processor was impaired, but there were so many disrupting influences going on, distracting you, making it impossible to concentrate on what you were looking at, having the words disappear right in front of you and being replaced by other words and other sentences and jumping from the first paragraph to the last paragraph without even realizing it unless you use a letter, a finger or a marker. And some were even not only light sensitive, but wavelength sensitive. So they could read better with colored lenses, certain colored lenses, than clear lenses or without. And many could read big print better than small print. Now, if this was a comprehension problem, it wouldn't matter whether the print was big or small. You wouldn't understand it. But why did big print help? Because the eyes could fixate. The eye is like a guided missile system. Or the inner ear is. It tells the eye to go from letter to letter and word to word and line to line and paragraph to paragraph. If that missile system is off, it's going to misguide the eye in time and space, and you're going to get a scramble, a secondary scramble. Not only are the primary signals to the reading center off, but you're going to get secondary scrambling as a result of all these failed mechanisms.
Wow, so, I have to tell you, I mean, this must have been like a bombshell when you really, you know, brought this to the medical community, and it must have been like a eureka moment for, I mean, the patients must have gone crazy because this is the explanation to all of this neurological irregularity that they're experiencing. It must have been a phenomenal, I mean, you must have been wildly excited and a little frustrated, and, you know, it must have been, hopefully it was a snowball effect where it actually started to pick up steam the more that you presented this. But believe it or not, we have to take another break. This is so fascinating. When we come back, Doctor, would you please share with us, I know you've got a million stories. You've got a lot of stories, and I'd love for you to share some of the patients and some of the stories, but also to tell us, like, where is it now? I mean, what is it? What is the specialty, the inner ear specialty? Is it?
It's called neuro-otology.
Otology, that's what it is. So you have to tell us the state of neuro-otology and where people can get help and, you know, where the state of the science is right now. And please share with us. I'm sure you have some amazing patient stories that we would all love to hear. So we're going to take another break, our last break. When we come back, we're going to continue to pick Dr. Levinson's very extensive brain and talk about his wonderful research in this and this really challenging disorder. So don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Dr. Gans is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
Today we are talking with Dr. Harold Levinson, who is a dyslexia specialist. He's a renowned psychiatrist as well as a neurologist, and he's been doing amazing, groundbreaking, really transformative research on the subject of dyslexia and other processing disorders that have really been problematic for so many people for so long. Dr. Levinson is also the author of Feeling Smarter and Smarter. I am so glad to be back from break to hear from you. You know, we have to fast forward a little bit because, I'm sure if we talked about, we could probably talk with you about the history. You've been at this for so many years. about the history of what you've been through and what your process and your discovery and your research has been through. So tell us about, you know, the worst of it. Like, what was the worst blowback, and where is the state of neuro-ontology today? And then please share with us your stories.
Well, I think the worst blowback was the one in the beginning when I was trying to find what everybody else was looking for and couldn't find it because it wasn't there. That damage, brain damage to the thinking. And it was very frustrating. It was like hitting a wall. But I refused to give up. I come from an immigrant family of survivors, and we never gave up. And that's how they got to the U.S. That's how I got through medical school, and that's how I got through this research area. We don't give up. And especially when you have suffering patients that need you, they're depending on you, and you have to give them all you got. And I had many eureka moments, not just one, but I ran into many walls, not just one, because every simple assumption I made and then everybody else may turn out to be wrong. And nothing was simple. But when something goes wrong, you then have to figure out, well, what was wrong about it? And let me tell you one of the worst moments. I had developed an eye tracking instrument. And what it measures is eye tracking capacity. In other words, dyslexics have clumsy eyes, so to speak. They're clumsy in general, not necessarily severely. You have Olympics that are clumsy, but not in the area of their Olympic achievements in other areas. So you can be an Olympian athlete and have a speech coordination problem or a writing coordination problem, and it's not going to be measured in the Olympics, but in any event. So I developed this eye tracking instrument, and it made perfect sense that they had clumsy eyes, and I could measure blurring speeds. When the eye follows an object, at some point, the object goes too fast, the eyes have to stop, and the object blurs out. And lo and behold, the first number of patients started to do exactly what I predicted. They blurred out very quickly, and I had a very simple instrument. Then exceptions. As I began to do it more and more, I got dyslexics that could, I don't know, they could track objects that I couldn't see anymore, and I'm not dyslexic. And I didn't know what to do. It defied simple logic, and I persisted in doing this test over and over again, probably another 1,000 times, until one day an adult dyslexic comes in. I do the test, and she said, which blurring speed do you want? So I said, what are you talking about? You have more than one? She said, yeah, I can see all six elephants at once, and then they blur out. Then I can track one at a time until that blurs out. So what happens is there were multiple blurring speeds. One blurring speed, one tracking mechanism comes from the inner ear. One compensatory tracking mechanism comes from the thinking brain. So in many patients, when the tracking mechanism gives way because of a deficient inner ear mechanism, a normal thinking brain eye tracking mechanism takes hold and it tracks one of the six elephants running across the screen. But it took me several years and 1,000 individual trials to begin to understand why this was happening. And it was extremely frustrating. It drove me absolutely up a wall.
But I can imagine.
when I understood it, this opened up a whole other dimension in how dyslexics compensate and why many dyslexic tests fail. Almost every dyslexic test out there failed. And because it was too simple. Mine was too simple. I didn't understand enough about it. I understood enough to get started, but not enough to maintain its high degree of accuracy because I couldn't understand another dimension that was hidden. But each wall I hit because of stubbornness, because I backed off from the wall and went and then tried another way and another way and then kept talking to patients and kept trying. Every failure turned out to be a success in the end. And that's how the research went from beginning to end. And I'm still learning every single day. And what other people are now learning is the cerebellum that I said was impaired many, many years ago is now first being given importance. Now for the inner ear experts, you ask me. Now the inner ear experts, again, very often don't study the cerebellum. That's studied by the neurologist. And there's a lack of crossover. So that even the vestibular disorder organizations, they seldom mention the cerebellum. They just mention the inner ear or the vestibular problem in the brain. And they don't mention the cerebellum, even though that's a supercomputer for the inner ear system. So you have many blind spots among all the specialties. And I
let me just say this. So it doesn't sound as if this has been mainstreamed into the specialty. It is not yet mainstreamed, but I'm just like I was talking about the the folic acid. You know what happened is that for the past 20 years now, everybody has to get folic acid if they're pregnant, and they're even recommending it before pregnancy. So it took a long time, but now folic acid is part of prenatal care. So do you see this as getting integrated into the mainstream and this becoming a protocol for these different kinds of conditions?
Slowly, more and more so, since the neuroimaging studies were able to detect the impairment within the cerebellum. And the books and media experts like you promoting this and letting people understand, giving them an understanding of what this problem is. Anybody with this disorder will immediately understand what I'm saying. By the way, I don't know that you mentioned my website where you can find Amazon. But
you know, you're not going to believe it. Doctor, we're going to talk about it right now. I can't believe how fast this time went by. We didn't get to hear all your wonderful stories, but sufficient to say you've probably had thousands of delighted, thrilled, and excited patients who have gotten well. And yes, we want to talk because we've only got a minute or two left, if you can believe that. It has flown by. Tell us, let everybody know, give us your information about where they can reach you, the best place to get a hold of you, your website, if you wouldn't mind, please.
By the way, I designed my website myself from the Apple Store. But anyway, it's dyslexiaonline.com. And the reason I mentioned it also is there's a wealth of information that readers can obtain and grasp what their children have or what they have just from the website alone. The book can be ordered from Amazon directly or via my website. It's feeling smarter and smarter. There's a bigger subtitle we don't have to get into. And the other important thing I want to leave patients with is many children are diagnosed with dyslexia or attention deficit disorder, phobias, anxiety disorder, dyspraxia. Every symptom has a name because everybody didn't connect the symptoms together. They thought they were all caused by different impairments within the brain. And so patients come to me with 10 different disorders, and parents are overloaded. They don't know what to do.
Right.
How could a normal, healthy child have 10 unrelated brain disorders?
Exactly. I mean, I just want to congratulate you. First of all, I think the work that you've done is absolutely brilliant, and I hope that you get to see the day when it is integrated into mainstream. This is so wonderful. It's exciting, exciting work. I'm delighted that you've come onto the show. I want to make sure everybody has your name spelled correctly. Can you do that? Well, I'll do that for them. It's Harold, N-L-E-V-I-N-S-O-N-M-D. Dr. Levinson's website is dyslexia, D-Y-S-L-E-X-I-A, online.com. And you can reach Dr. Levinson at drlevinson@aol.com. It is a pleasure. I'm excited for, I have three children of my own, and I'm really excited for parents and for kids and for grown-ups who are suffering from these things. And thank you on behalf of all of us for the wonderful work that you're doing.
And I didn't even get into the phobias and how it can help some aspect of autism, but perhaps a later date.
Absolutely, Doctor. We'd love to have you back. You're just a wealth of information. So thank you again. And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another enlightening, educational, and inspiring program here on Living Above the Drama.